Okay, so now we are discussing the Rambam part three. Again, where are we in terms of our discussion of the history of the Rambam? The Rambam was born in 1135 in Cordova. He's forced to flee with his family in 1148. He settles in North Africa, but he's forced to flee in 1165. So he travels to Eretz Yisrael. Life's not so great there. He moves to Egypt. We saw in the last session the potential reason justifying the Rambam living in Egypt when there seems to be a Torah prohibition. In any case, Jews are permitted to believe in their God and in Judaism and to practice Judaism and reside in Egypt, but there is a lax observance of religious laws. There's not strong rabbinic leadership in Egypt at this time, as opposed to the Karaite leadership. There is strong religious leadership by the Karaites when the Rambam arrives in Egypt at around 1165, when he's about 30 years old. The Karaites are a Jewish sect that originated in the 8th century that rejected Torah Shebaal Peh and the Talmud and the rabbis. By this time, hundreds of years after the Karaite movement was started, they were losing ground in other countries, but they were gaining ground in Egypt. The calendar was the main cause of disagreement between the Karaites and the Rabbanites. The Rabbanites, traditional Jews, followed the calendar regulated by astronomical calculations, but the Karaites retained the ancient method of determining the new month by the witnesses' observation of the new month's or the new moon's appearance. Therefore, they celebrated holidays on different days. Additionally, the Karaites had different rules on Shabbos, and they would not permit their followers to enter Rabbinite synagogues illuminated by lamps on Shabbos. Perhaps we think that those streams of Judaism that are not the traditional streams of Judaism are typically more lax in their observance of halacha, or as they understand it, halachic principles and rules, they understand it. The Karaites, for example, that wasn't the case, because the Karaites, for example, believe that you weren't allowed to have fire burning on Shabbos. So there was no lights at night in their homes. There was no heat. They wouldn't eat cholent. They couldn't eat food that was hot on Shabbos. So from the very start, the Rambam seemed to have advocated separation from the Karaites. The Rambam, in his commentary on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which talks about the origin of the Tzidukim and the Baitusim, right? It says that the Antignos, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, tells us, the Antignos tells us that we shouldn't be like Avodim, Amisham, Shimasarav, like Almanas, Kabo Prash. We shouldn't be like servants who serve the master in order to receive reward. And the Rambam writes that Antignos had two students, Tzadok and Baitos. And when Tzadok and Baitos heard Antignos say that you shouldn't be like people who serve their master in order to receive reward, in reference to serving God, they said, well, why shouldn't we serve God in order to receive reward? Must be, there is no reward. And therefore, they believe that there's no such thing as reward and punishment, and they separated from the Torah. And then the Rambam writes in his commentary, Mini os tamchu ela kitos haruros. And from these two individuals, Tzadok and Baitos, cursed sects sprung from them, sprouted from them. Kilos haminim, congregations of heretics, asher yikaru be'eretz hazos, and they are called in this land, Ratzoni lomar Mitzrayim, meaning what they're called in this land, Karaim, they're Karaites. Shmam etzel chachachom tzadokim baitusim. The sages call them Tzadokim and Baitusim. V'heim asher heichel la'atil dofi ba'kabbalah. They basically rejected, mocked Kabbalah tradition. U'lefaresh ha'ksuvim kefi ma'ashe yira'e l'chol ha'adam. And they explained the text, the biblical text, as it seemed to anyone, mibli ha'shishama l'chacham klal, without listening to the sages at all. B'nigud lo'omro yisalel pi ha'torah l'lo yasser. In contradiction of, or as which is against, that which the Torah says that you have to follow the words of the rabbis, the words of Chazal, based on the Pesukim al Pi Torah, Sher Yomru Lecha, Yishir Yagidu Lecha, Lo Tasser, Mikol Sher Yagidu Lecha, Yomina Small. You must follow the words of Chazal. So what the Rambam does here is the Rambam explains that he believes that, the Karaites, that they are descendants, maybe spiritual descendants of the Tzidokim and the Baitosim. In fact, they really are not the descendants of Tzidokim and Baitosim. Tzidokim and Baitosim, they were the Sadducees and the Bothusians, who basically were the aligned with the priestly class in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. They were very much assimilated and very much with the Greek culture and eventually Roman culture, and they were probably more lax when it came to Jewish tradition. And the Karaites, I guess, were similar to the Tzidokim Baitosim in that they rejected traditional rabbinic authority, but they weren't really descent. They didn't claim descent from the Tzidokim Baitosim, but the Rambam just combined them all. He said that they all are essentially the same, and the Rambam disqualifies them. The Rambam believed that they should not take part in the minyan because they don't recognize the Talmudic rule about this number of 10 constituting a minyan, so they can't fulfill this obligation. It seems that his attack on the Karaites forced him to leave Alexandria, and he ended up settling in Fostat, which is Old Cairo. There's a tshuva, though, in the Rambam that he wrote, Simon Tuf Memtes, and there was a question, Shela Meinyan HaKaraim Ech Yisnagu HaRabanim Imahem B'milas B'nehem V'Shela Shlom V'Lechas B'Bateyam. How should the rabbis treat the Karaites by circumcising their kids, greeting them, going to their homes? And there the Rambam writes, V'Omer Ki Ela HaKaraim HaShochnim Po B'nu Amon U'V'Eretz Mitzrayim V'Damesik V'Shar Makomos Eretz Yishmael V'Zulatam. He says that the Karaites who live here in Egypt, in Damascus and other lands, Arab lands, it's fit to give them honor, to treat them appropriately with a sense of humility, in the path of truth and in peace, as long as they treat us nicely. As long as they stop being stubborn and stop attacking the sages of our generation. And certainly when they guard their tongue from mocking the words of our rabbis, the Tanoim, the sages of the Mishnah and the Talmud, because we follow their customs and their practices that from them and from the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu, that's who we follow. And with this, if they treat us respectfully, then certainly we should honor them, treat them respectfully. Even their homes, we can circumcise their kids. Even on Shabbos, we can bury their dead. We can comfort their mourners. He takes a much more positive approach in this tshuva. Perhaps we can distinguish between the leadership or the ideology and the individual people. In other words, the rabbi feels that the Karaite ideology is, in a sense, similar to the Sadducee ideology that rejects Torah Shebaal Peh. It should absolutely be rejected. But as to individual Karaites, we should treat them respectfully. There's another major issue in which he disagreed with the Karaites. That was for a Nida, when she goes to the mikvah, can she bathe in Mayim She'uvim, in drawn water, basically by having someone would pour water over her, as opposed to a mikvah of rainwater or spring water. And that's obviously with the traditional approach. Now, the Rambam was an independent thinker, and he was not afraid to make communal enactments. For example, in one of his tshuvos in Siman Reish Nun Vav, he writes that They were anashim kulam bishas tfilas shliach tzibor eina mashkiv chalamashu omer. He writes that there were people during Chazaras Hashatz who weren't listening to what the Baal Tefillah was saying. Elamasichim zayim zeviyotzim. But they were simply talking to each other and they were going out. V'hum avarach bracha levatol kimat. And he was, the shliach tzibor is essentially making a bracha levatol, a whole v'ein shemer lo. No one's listening to the shliach tzibor. And he writes that kol mi she'eino baki, and someone who wasn't an expert, this guy who walks into shul, and he sees kasher roa talmid chacham zulasam asichim v'kachim v'rekim misnagim kmi she'eino mispalo b'shas tefila b'tzibor osegam hukozeh. Someone doesn't know better. He sees some people who seem to be scholars. They're learned and they're talking to Chazar Shachat, and he's doing this as well. And what did the Rambam do as a result of this? The Rambam canceled Chazaras Hashatz in Egypt because of the noise. And it was only reinstituted in the 16th century by the Radvaz. So if we think talking is a problem in our generation, it was also a problem in the days of the Rambam. But no one now, I think, has taken the stand like the Rambam did of canceling out Chazaras Hashatz. But it was a problem then, it's a problem now, it's something we should all work on. But it is what it is. We should always work on being better during Chazaras Hashatz. And the Rambam struggled with it as we struggle with it today. In any case, in 1169, the Rambam's brother drowned in the Indian Ocean while on a business trip, leaving a wife and two children. And with him were lost not only the family fortune, but also monies belonging to others. The Rambam took this tragedy very badly, and for a year he was depressed. And then he decided to make the medical profession his livelihood. After his brother's death, the Rambam pursued a medical practice, and this had brought him in contact with Sultan Saladin's court. And eventually the Rambam becomes the physician of Saladin, and he was eventually appointed the Nagid, the leader of the Egyptian Jews by the Sultan. Meanwhile, the Rambam began to write his magnum opus, the Mishneh Torah, in 1170, which was a comprehensive halachic compendium derived from the Talmud and the Gaonim. It was a systematic organization of topics. It took him 10 years to write. Now, the Rambam discussed the laws relating to Eretz Yisrael in the Temple era, such as the sacrifices, Tuma and Tahara. And this was unlike, for example, the Shulchan Aruch, which was to be written later. The Shulchan Aruch, written by Rav Yosef Cairo, only contains halachos that are practical for the Jews of his day. The Rambam, though, wrote on everything, even topics that were no longer relevant without a Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam, in his introduction to the Yad HaChazaka, to this magnum opus, introduces the idea of Misora through Halacha. He says that Moshe got the Torah and he gave it to Yoshua, gave it to the Zakenim, and he traces our Misora from Moshe all the way through the Mishnah and through the Gemara, even to modern times. And perhaps there were anti-Karaite motivations. He wanted to demonstrate that the Karaites, you know, they were against the Misora, they were against traditional teachings, and the Rambam wanted to demonstrate that all of our traditions are based on a direct Misora all the way from Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, there's a question, which we're not going to discuss today, but there's a question as to a discrepancy of 165 years between Jewish tradition and secular chronology. It seems, according to Chazal, the second Beis HaMikdash lasted for 420 years. According to the secular chronology, it seemed to have lasted probably around 585 years. And the question is, what happened with those 165 years? So one approach is that secular chronology was incorrect. A second possibility is that Chazal were incorrect, that they were great people in terms of transmitting the Misora, but their historical data was based on the information given to them, just like perhaps their scientific data, some of their scientific data or their medical knowledge was based on the knowledge of the time and perhaps some of their scientific beliefs may not reflect the current scientific beliefs. And so maybe the same thing when it comes to history. But there's also a perspective that they intentionally cut out those 165 years because, for this very reason, that they wanted to demonstrate that there was an unbroken chain dating from Moshe Rabbeinu all the way until their time, And therefore, there were 165 years where there was silent, where there was no mention of who were leaders of the Jewish people at the time, what did they write, who were the spiritual leaders. It's not clear. So they did not include. They only included. They excluded that from the count, so they can portray an unbroken chain from Moshe all the way until their time. And this is what the Rambam does. The Rambam portrays in his introduction an unbroken chain, again, perhaps with anti-Karaite motivations. And the Rambam then writes that we need this book to know what to do. The Rambam's goal is that we should know halacha. And if you look in the Gemara, and you want to know halacha from a Gemara, so you have to look to many different places. This is what he writes in his introduction to the Rambam, to his Yad Chazakah. He says, there are questions and answers, there are discussions, and it's very hard to get to the bottom line halacha. I want to make life easier for you. Now, there was criticism for his work. The Ravid writes, Savar letake velo tike, the Rambam wanted to fix, and he didn't fix. Ki hazav der kol machabim shayu lefanav, ki hem hevi urayla divrehem, that all previous authors of halachic works brought proofs to their opinion. Because for advar b'shem omram, and they brought sources. Vayalo bazet toalas gadola, and there's a major purpose for writing sources. Ki pamim rabos yale aleva dayan lasor lahatir, because sometimes a judge wants to forbid something or permit something. V'rayasa mimakom echad, and his proof is from one place. If he would have known that someone else has a different opinion, he would change his view. I don't know if I should retract my opinion based on what this author wrote, because I don't know what his sources are. And so the Ravid was challenged the Rambam, because there was an unprecedented method of arrangement. First of all, you had the Mishnah, six orders of the Mishnah, and the Gemara is based on the Mishnah. The Rambam makes his own order. He doesn't supply sources. Some of the halachos sound presumptuous and arbitrary. The Rambam also wrote, and he declared in his Mishnah Torah, he said that he is summarizing the entire Torah Sheba'al Peh, the entire oral law, and he says that no one would have to read any other work except for Torah and the Mishnah Torah. And again, the Rambam wanted to make life easier for people who couldn't study Gemara. But it was felt by his critics that making that statement, just read Torah and Mishnah Torah, that this would result in the neglect of Talmudic studies. There were also doubts that the Rambam could be the legislator for all Jews. Until then, only the decision of the Gaonim, the heads of the yeshivas of Babel, were acknowledged as universally binding. It's true that this code was a change in style and Jewish thinking. In studying the Talmud, the Rambam shut out his inventive imagination. He wanted to clarify, not expand. He wanted to sum up, not continue. He wanted to provide an overview, not a conjecture. Instead of the process, he wanted to teach the concept. Instead of the case, he wanted to teach the law. Instead of the people, the matter. Instead of the history, he wanted to teach the theory. Instead of a living atmosphere, back and forth, the anonymous authority. Instead of the situation, the abstraction. This is a legal book where you want to know what the laws are. The code was copied and purchased and carried to all parts of the Jewish world, and it became a textbook for students, a compendium for judges, and a reference work for all Jews who were thirsty for knowledge. The Rambam wrote the Sefer HaMitzvos as a prelude to the Mishnah Torah, listing the 613 mitzvos, posting 14 shorashim, 14 guiding principles for identifying and enumerating them, and dividing them into positive and negative mitzvos. And in doing so, he provided a guideline for the Mishnah Torah. In our next session, we will conclude with our discussion of the Rambam by discussing very important works that he wrote, or very important letters that he wrote about his belief in resurrection of the dead, and his famous philosophical work called The Mor Nevuchim, The Guide to the Perplexed.